Hey, Slingers, welcome back to another week of the Word Slinger podcast. And I'm real happy you're here. We're going to be chatting with, I'm going to say he's a new good friend of mine. We're going to be talking to Herb Fried. So stick around. You're not going to want to miss this fantastic interview. See you next. Hey, how you doing on money? I know that's a touchy subject, but I got something that may help you out. See, I'm using an app called Acorns. It helps me manage some investing, put some money back, get a little interest. It's kind of nice to watch my money grow. So I want to share that with you. Go to kevintomlinson.com/acorns and you'll get some free money. See you there.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand. Write your book. Redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Well, I am Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger. Man, I'm glad you're here. If you weren't here, I'd be sitting here talking to myself. Frankly, I think I do anyway. I sometimes wonder, because you know, in the early days of this show, now we just had, by the way, our sixth anniversary for the show. 6 years we've been doing the Word Slinger podcast. Things have more or less stayed on the same track, I think. I mean, more or less we've been on the same path, but you know, there have been some format changes and that sort of thing. But if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, go back to last week's episode, number 197, and take a listen to that. Talked about a few things I learned, some philosophies I've picked up along the way, and just sort of what I feel the importance of the show has been, at least in my life and hopefully in your life too. But that said, I mean, here we are on another week. I think the point I was trying to make was back in the day, I knew I didn't have an audience for a long while. And I still sat down, got my energy up, and did the work. Not always easy with this show. I'm going to be honest with you. Not always easy. It's funny because I dread it sometimes right up until this moment when I'm actually sitting in front of the microphone and recording. It's unreal what taking action will do for you as a creative. Therein lies the lesson. You should always work past the dread. Feel the dread and do it anyway, to paraphrase the aphorism. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Feel the anxiety and do it anyway. I read recently an article in Psychology Today, I believe. I've actually encountered this idea before. I actually had this notion and then went searching for materials to see if anyone was looking into it, and turns out they were. And it's this idea that anxiety and fear are the same chemical, biological response as excitement. So if you can just change your perspective and decide that what I'm feeling is not anxiety, but is instead excitement, it changes everything about what you do next. And a big part of that, is feeling the fear and doing it anyway. So feel the fear, acknowledge that it is fear, and say to yourself, I feel excited. Convince yourself that that feeling is excitement. Move your body, position your body, you know, hold your body in a way that says you're excited, and then take action. And you won't believe how quickly that anxiety and fear just turns into enthusiasm and excitement. So anyway, that's not the point of the episode. This is not a solo slinger episode, so I'm not gonna expound on that for the next half hour. Excuse me, because I want you to hear this amazing interview with my new friend Herb Fried, who is quite possibly one of the gentlest souls I've talked to in quite some time. I'm just honored to have had the opportunity to speak with him on this episode, and I think you'll get a lot out of this conversation. So I'm not going to hold back any longer. I feel excited. I hope you feel excited. See what I did there. And this is my new friend Herb Fried. let's all pay rapt attention and see what we can learn. And stick around the other side. I'll wrap us up with, I hope, something interesting. So I'll see you there. Hey, everybody. Now, I love talking to folks like my next guest, because he's got this very, we're going to call it an eclectic history and background, all the way from ordained rabbi to producing and directing films and TV and all kinds of crazy stuff. You got books going on. I am talking to Herb Fried. I'm sorry, I stumbled over your name there for a second. I caught something else out of the corner of my eye. Herb Fried. And I am very happy to have you on the show, sir. Thank you for being on.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's my great, very great pleasure. And you're right. I guess I'm a guy who's not easily satisfied. So I've been through a few different occupations in my life, but I don't think they're so different. You know, when I started, I was a rabbi for only 3 years.
Yeah.
But you study in the rabbinate, and when you prepare for the rabbinate, you learn to tell stories, because, you know, one of the great Christian theologians said that the entire all religion is story.
Yeah.
And so that, in fact, it is. And then, you know, I spent about 35 years making feature films, and that's stories. And now I'm writing books, which are stories, and that gives me it's just a continuation of what I really love to do in life.
So your passion, yeah, I could see that. You definitely comes through in your history that storytelling is your passion. You know, you and I are similar in that. I actually went through seminary early on in my career, and then worked in film and TV, and now I write books. So we're just leading slightly askew parallel lives, or.
Well, it's my pleasure to be alongside you.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, in Texas speech, I guess I'd be your sidekick.
Yeah, we'd be in each other's posse.
Good.
So what prompted the move from rabbi to producer? I mean, what made you decide to do that?
Well, it was actually one form of storytelling to another. But the life in the rabbinate, in the clergy in general, it took a lot out of me. You're in the life cycle of everyone in your community and your congregation. Yeah. You're there for the joy, and you're there for the burial and the death and the pain. And to be perfectly honest, as a young man, I just couldn't take it. It was just too hard for me emotionally. And though it gave me some pleasure, the one thing it didn't do is make me laugh.
Yeah.
And I love to laugh. And I find that when I'm writing, and I only started about 7 years ago, when I'm writing, I find myself laughing, crying, and then if I feel like it, I call my mother. it's connection to everything in life that means something to you, especially when you can write novels and you can just go wherever your mind takes you or your heart takes you.
Yeah.
And that's a great pleasure for me.
Now you connected the two ideas that producing films and writing novels were both storytelling. That's a given. We can connect them there. What are some of the other ways that these two things are sort of similar to you?
They're similar in some ways, and in some ways they're not.
Yeah.
I find one of the great pleasures of writing is not having to deal with 40 people who are determining how much money I should spend or not spend,
right,
you know, to make a film. Or when I write a screenplay and I know precisely the actor I want, mm-hmm, and I go before them and they say, you know, they don't know him in Scotland or God knows where. And so you're everything is a compromise.
Yeah.
So I made some films that I'm quite proud of. As a matter of fact, tomorrow morning they're re-releasing one of my early films. Not one of my favorites, to be sure. A bad title, but a really interesting film with John Saxon and some really good actors. And that was called Beyond Evil. And that's coming out again. So my films keep coming out, keep coming back. And that's a pleasure. That's a joy. I'm glad to see it. Although I must admit that none of them are, am I able to say this is a work from my heart entirely?
Really?
It's gotta be a compromise. On the other hand, when I write, I write until I literally, you know, laugh, cry, and call my mother. I mean, it's something that just has to please me and be in that part of my life where I find comfort and where I find knowledge and where I feel like I'm part of the human situation.
Yeah.
So that's what the writing is.
Yeah. I definitely felt so, you know, I transitioned from film and TV to writing novels. I'd been writing my whole life though, so I cheated. But that I did like the control.
How do you mean that? How did you cheat?
I cheated.
They're your novels.
Right. I cheated because I make it sound like I moved from one career to the other, but really I just did other things while I wrote.
I do think that's what life is. I really do. Yeah. So we're the lucky ones. I mean, I find getting up in the morning, and it also helps me over, I don't know how it was with you, but the events in my life that are, you know, very shaking or very dramatic, I'm able to respond to those by writing words, by writing, by communicating to other people. And then when I get the reviews and sometimes they're just bowl me over. I'm just looking at one that a woman wrote when my Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants came out.
Yeah.
Her review was, I know what this is. It's Catcher in the Rye with a Yiddish accent. and you know, you just sort of, I'm communicating with all these people. You must have felt that yourself, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
When you write your
book? Yeah, I love when people connect that way. Like they sort of have their own aha moment that your book reminds them of some other work that you maybe had no intention of emulating.
Yeah, I did not think about Catcher in the Rye when I wrote that book.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, you know, that I have no idea, you know, where it was going to come from. I started to write,
yeah.
You know, and then I had enough pages and we said, the publisher said, let's get it out for Christ. Stop changing. Stop. Let's get it out. Let's sell some books.
Exactly. Yeah. I love, there's sort of a, I don't know if you'd call this a subtitle or just a description. I don't know, but you say it's a novel in stories. What does that mean exactly?
The book has five chapters, five stories.
Okay.
And it follows one character. We start when he's a rabbinical student of all things. And as a rabbinical student, he has intellectual interests. He has social interests. He likes poetry, but he's a young man and he also loves women. So, come on. So, you know, going back into that was really a lovely story. And so we start with him as a rabbinical student. And then we go through aspects of his life. When we go through 30 years of the same character.
Right.
And all the events that occur and that fashion his life. Mm-hmm. I've found so far of the things that I've done and I've written, that's the one that I'm most proud of. And I've gotten the most response to. I like some of the earlier ones too. I mean, love Shert, which was an earlier book. But it's a very different kind of a story. It's much more solid life as opposed to light. There's nothing light about it.
Now, are your books somewhat autobiographical or completely made up?
Well, you know, my wife of blessed memory was a brilliant writer. She was a film editor too. We worked together. Her name is Marion Siegel, and she used to say, you know, the thing about writing is, do you write fiction or, you know, I mean, what exactly is it? And what she said was, all biography is fiction, and all fiction is biography. So you can only really write, I believe, what you know. I mean, yeah. There are people who can write about, you know, life on the planet Vigo.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not one of those. I don't know. You know, I'm not that familiar with your writing. And do you write from your?
Yeah. I mean, I write archaeological thrillers. So like Indiana Jones type stuff. So definitely my life. That's definitely based on my life.
Of course.
Swinging into adventure. And
I think that's wonderful. Well, you know, I find the same thing. I mean, my characters are, you know, sound different and they talk different. And some do have that, what one writer called the Yiddish accent, or what editor called the Yiddish accent. That happens occasionally. But there are other accents too. And there are other aspects of the writer, of me, as I see them. And I find that, I just find that so much fun to be able to call up, and then I can rewrite aspects of my life to say what would have happened had I done that. And then I explore that, and I find it very self-fulfilling. I can't imagine anybody not wanting to write. I know it's kind of tough to get into, you know, sitting down and just, you know, putting words to paper. I don't know how old you were when you started, or how early in your life you started, but you know, did you find that too? Sitting down and, you know, just making sure you put out the words.
Yeah, I was very, very young. Like, you know, 5 years old when I started, you know, telling stories and writing them down. And
are you serious?
Oh, I am very serious. Yeah, and that's the thing. I think a lot of people who do this feel the way you do. Like, they can't imagine people wouldn't want to sit and write and tell stories. But I don't think everyone does feel that way. I think that we writers think everyone feels that way.
Well, you know, the thing is that what I find is I've always loved to hear stories.
Yeah, me too.
And when I was, you know, anywhere from 3 years old, I grew up, my family was first generation American.
Okay.
And my grandmother was born in Russia and never really learned to speak much English. Which was very funny. And I lived in Ohio, in Youngstown, and the neighbors were all the same. They came from Russia. They came from Italy. They came from you know, many different places. And the older women never learned English, but they would sit on the glider on the porch, and they would sit there in the summer and they would talk to each other. How they communicated, I have no idea, but they were able to tell stories, you know, without a language. And my grandmother, when I was as early as, you know, 3 or 4, she would always say, "You must hear this story." She'd be reading the story in the Yiddish newspaper.
Yeah.
And so you hear about this terrible, tragic marriage where the man was so mean to his wife, and she acts out all the roles. And I was listening, my God, how terrifying. And it just grabbed me, and I had to hear these stories. I love those stories.
Yeah.
But those stories, I guess, are what, you know, what kept me going. I don't know how, but if you started at 5, my God.
But it was the same thing. You know, I heard everyone around me, and my whole life, it was all about stories. And I was very involved in our church when I was young. And, you know, our minister was always telling stories. And I think it just sort of, I don't know, it just became my language.
that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you, where are you? You know, you've got a whole lifetime of inspiration to draw on, I know. Where do you find the most inspiration for your work?
Well, I made 15 feature films.
Yeah.
So I made one of them in south of France, one in Italy, one in Spain, one in Israel. And I just traveled a lot, and especially with my wife, Marion, and we had the most unbelievable times. So, I mean, we had stories where we'd go into a bar at night or a club, and they play some, and particularly in Spain, and they would play some phenomenal flamenco. And I would go over to one of the guys, and I'd say, you know, I'd love to hear some more of you guys, but how about a little private thing? So we would they would take us to some God knows where with two other guitarists. And they would start playing all kinds of music, and they would tell us stories about, you know, the Catalan, and you know, and I, all these things sort of made a major impact on my life.
Yeah.
So I saw all these different kinds of things and the different people and the way they bow, you know, just when they would cut your ears off, but when they look at you, they smile and bow. And you, so you've got to use these in characters. And so I find my, the things, the personal adventures very, very relevant. But in my case, when I did movies, that was, it was a different kind of a story. Yeah. Now it comes from the heart. And the reality is I didn't start until 7 years ago. And that was when my wife passed away.
Yeah.
And what happened was I couldn't find myself interested in anything. I had no interest in making any more films. It was done. I'd done that. Mm-hmm. And so I just began to sit down and I started to write. I started by writing letters to her. And I began to think about events that we had together, things that she said, and how I felt about it. And then if I can capture what I feel, what I am feeling now as I think about it, let me sit down and write a page. And I did. I started to write. And I find now that every morning I get up I get up early, but I'm at the computer at 10.
Yeah.
I'm a late sleeper.
That's an early LA day.
another LA day. Hey, you can call me at 9:45 and I'll be happy to pick up.
Right.
The phone. because I also love to read too. And I guess all of us, we all do. And that's kind of where you get the richness. But I find you really have to know about what touches your heart.
Yeah.
And what makes it laugh and what makes it cry. That's just me, but I think it's true of many people.
Yeah. 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 That's one of the things I think I love about writing, no matter what type of writing it is. When I wrote for TV, I did mostly documentary stuff. So my experience is very different from yours. But I, you have to kind of find that place inside yourself, that sort of loves the material and loves telling the story and then, marries those two ideas together.
Well, yeah, I understand perfectly. But how long have you been? You've been writing a long time then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've written my whole life. I've written professionally since very young, like 12 years old. I didn't start writing books, novels until in my, like 30s. So you got ahead of me.
And your novels are primarily action stories?
Yeah, yeah, mostly. Yeah, yeah. So, and I write some nonfiction stuff too. So.
Okay. I know that because a bunch of my films are action pieces.
Yeah.
Which is why I can no longer hear. it takes a toll on the eardrum. When you've got car crashes and explosions and I think the worst one I ever did was an underwater scene, and I can't even remember who was in it. I know the guy, the big karate guy. I forget his name.
Bruce Lee.
Pardon me?
Was it Bruce Lee? No.
No, it's an American, actually.
American. Oh, okay. Chuck Norris?
Chuck Norris. Chuck
okay.
Norris. And there were three Norrises, as a matter of fact, three brothers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One scene was underwater.
Wow.
And just being underwater as much as I was, I got up and I kept shaking my head. And it takes a toll.
Yeah.
So, I guess you'd have to call that would fit as sacrifice, wouldn't it? Sacrifice for your art.
Sacrifice for your art, yeah.
Okay.
And I think, if you have to go through some kind of traumatic experience at least once in order to call yourself a true artist.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. And then, the process is fascinating too, because you never, you never know. I think that's that wonderful song, You Never Can Tell.
Yeah.
You never know what the public is going to feel about it. And then I also find, I don't know if you find this too, but I have a wonderful publicist and editor.
Yeah.
And she's phenomenal. Actually, she came up with the title, Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants.
Oh, okay.
And my next book, which is coming out, she had another great title. That won't come out until the end of the year. But that's called Gracias a la Vida.
Sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, but she does. And they, I'm so grateful for these people who really understand what's in my heart better than I do in many instances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I find that really, really helpful. I don't know if you've found that too, but
I have some amazing people in my life that make my whole life possible. And so I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah, we are a nation of people. We are, I don't think we just can't get along. I think it was Aristotle who said that.
Yeah.
Initially, there is no such thing as living alone. But you say you were in the clergy too. Were you actually?
Yeah, briefly. Yeah. Oh. I went through a whole little program and was ordained and did some things, and I decided it wasn't quite the right path for me. I'm still very spiritual, but I didn't stick it out as a minister.
Yeah, but that's you hit the right word, spiritual.
Yeah.
Because that's the one great carryover, I think, from the clergy.
Yeah.
And I'm not embarrassed by it. To the contrary, my beliefs are strengthened by some of the things I see, and by some of the events I see, and by some of the cruelty and some of the grace that I see in other people.
Yeah.
And I think, quite frankly, in today's times, it's really important to have something solid, that you can refer to.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's especially now. I mean, it's a very divisive time. Everybody seems like they're all set to be against each other.
We're the blue team and the red team, and there just doesn't seem to be any way to communicate. The only time that I find that doesn't work is when I find if I'm in a park, for example, and someone falls down, and they do, because I do sit in the park a lot, watch the little kids on the swings, the parents, and no matter who it is, if somebody needs help, they're all there. They all jump in. Which is really what America always meant to me.
Yeah.
In fact, in one of the stories of Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants, it's about the mother, the rabbi's mother, and her name is Bertha,
okay.
And she grew up in Russia, and this is in the story. And a good part of the story is that she feels that the one thing that she must do in this life is to become a citizen of the United States of America. And the question is why? And she said, because in Russia, every spring in the village that she grew up in, there were no paved roads. So the water that fell from the snow and melted just became filth, as they rolled down. And so in her village, she said the men would sit around ponds of filth, and when they see a stranger coming by, they would guide him in and throw him into the filthy water and keep him there, and everybody would laugh. And my mother said, in America, if somebody falls down, everybody reaches to pick him up. And she says, and that's what America means to her. And so she is determined in that story to realize her greatest gift, her greatest dream, which is to become a citizen of the United States of America. So that's a good story to start with, if anybody's interested. It's called Bertha, the story.
Okay. Can the stories be read out of order? Is that the way they're set up?
One can, because follows the one main character when from the time he's in his 20s, to where he's just almost where he becomes 60.
Yeah.
So that's where that is. But the actual essence of the story would work anywhere it goes. It's a totally different story.
You can switch it all up and tell a non-linear story to yourself if you want. So choose your own layout kind of thing.
There you go. I'm with you.
I don't mind that. That's that seems like that would be kind of a fun way to approach a book. Your title, I got to tell you, I have only a tiny issue with your title, because the tagline of this show is that I'm the guy who invented pants optional. So.
Oh really? I did not know that. Well, I'm honored. I'm honored indeed. So maybe my book should have a little tag, and don't forget to, just whatever you do, just remember Kevin Tomlinson. That's all.
Yeah, well, it'll, fine.
It'll all come out right.
That's right.
That's there.
So what's you say you got another book coming up soon?
Yeah, we do. I say we because I've worked very closely with my publicist. I try not to work so hard with my editor because she's difficult. By difficult, yeah. I mean she doesn't love everything I do.
Yeah, and my wife is difficult like that.
I know, but I think that's either heresy or mutiny or whatever. But and especially because she's generally right. So these are stories that that I love, and before they go to print, I have to make sure that the people that I respect and whose tastes I share feel the same way.
Yeah, that's great. I'm look forward to seeing the next one then. I got a copy of Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants. I have that,
okay.
And I haven't gotten to start reading it yet because it was everything. We kind of shifted things around, and I didn't get to it. That's my fault.
No. Fault where it belongs. It's my fault. Every time I see something technically that I'm not familiar with, I go into these spasms of fear. You know, what's going to happen if I push the wrong button?
So
because that is not something I'm very familiar with. But so I do apologize for that.
No, you're absolutely fine.
So glad we worked. I mean, I do some, the TV is okay because I just sit on a bench. And whenever I have to do when I'm looking at my own TV. Let's see.
I don't know.
I slip out of that. Every so often. But that's still that's kind of strange for me because I look at myself and I'm on the screen and I'm out of sync. I find that a little
disconcerting.
Difficult to deal with. Disconcerting. Good word. A little disconcerting.
I'm a writer.
You certainly are, and you're a wordsmith. And thank you.
Oh no, thank you. I gotta tell you, Herb, I'm really enjoying this conversation, which makes this next part sad because we're kind of at the end of our time. So I'm gonna have to wrap us up. But how about we tell everybody the best place they could possibly find your current book, and maybe that'll lead them to find it in the next one when it comes out.
Yeah, well, by all means, you can go to Amazon or even Google, and you'll look up Herb Fried, H-E-R-B-F-R-E-E-D, and you'll see some of my work, some of my books, and where you can find them. That would be a good place to begin. The one that most people seem to respond to is Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants.
Yeah.
So that's the one. The prior book is a very highly spiritual love story. I call it a transcendental love story.
Okay.
And it's called Beschert. That's a Yiddish word, which means meant to be. The idea is that your soulmate. It's just how one goes about finding his soulmate, and it's spelled Beschert, B as in boy, A S as in Sam, Beschert, Beschert.
Beschert. Yeah. And, we're gonna put links to everything in the show notes of the show, so people will be able to find it.
Okay, and the new one is called Gracias a la Vida, but that won't be coming out until December, so. So we have a little bit of time.
That sounds intriguing. I love the title. It has rhythm. I love rhythm. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. I know we had some bumps in the road, but it looks like it all worked out really well for the both of us. I'm so glad you were here.
Well, I'm just thrilled to do it, and I'm serious about inviting you for a drink when you come to, or lunch when you come to California. And I love this interview. It's just so, I mean, I was speaking to a kindred spirit.
Yeah, that's the way I feel too.
nothing is better for me. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Stick around just a second, and I'm going to say goodbye to the folks listening, because right now, everybody, you are hearing the Groovy Bridge music. You may dance in place at will, and if you stick around, we'll have some words of wisdom for you after the interview. Thank you again, Herb. I'm so glad we had a chance to connect.
Well, thank you.
Hey, you looking for a jump on your own indie author career but kind of confused about where to start? I got the place for you. Check out Draft to Digital. That's where you're going to be able to convert your manuscript, distribute it worldwide online, and get help the whole way from the best author support there is. Trust me on this one. So go check out Draft to Digital at drafttodigital.com/wordslinger. Hey, thanks for sticking around after that fantastic interview with Herb Fried. I hope you enjoyed that. Every now and then I meet someone in this business that I'm so happy I met, you know. Herb is definitely one of those guys. I'm going to take him up on his offer, by the way, to come swing by and visit him if I'm in L.A., which could happen. I mean, we're going to be doing the whole RV thing here soon, starting in April, so it could very well happen that I get a chance to meet Herb in person. I hope I do. And he just seems like a, I don't know, I love meeting people that, even without seeing them, because Herb and I did this interview over the phone, which is a little different than most of the interviews I conduct, but I could still see the light in Herb, if that makes any sense. Like, it still came through in the audio, and I hope it did in this episode too. That is going to wrap us up for this week on the Wordslinger podcast. I'm trying to keep these things kind of light for you, because I no longer do the hour long episodes out of respect for your time. But I hope you got something beautiful and wonderful and inspiring from this episode. Now, this weekend, I will be in Austin. I'm going to be hanging out with Aaron Minkey. Not really, not literally. I'm going to be hanging out in proximity to him as he does like a live presentation of Lore, which, if you haven't heard that podcast or seen the Amazon Prime television series, you should check those out. This is fascinating stuff. But I'm going to be in the general area of him. He won't know I'm there, more than likely, unless I get a chance to kind of greet with him later. But if you're in the Austin area, my wife and I are going to be hanging out. We're going to treat this kind of like a little mini vacation. I'll still be doing some writing, but if you spot me in the wild, please say hello. I'd love to chat with you, and I can introduce you to the backbone of my existence, my beautiful bride, Kara. I did not forget her name there. I just hesitated on whether or not I should say it. I don't know why. I say her name all the time. I don't know, whatever. Crazy days. Anyway, thank you so much for being a part of the Wordslinger podcast. Lo, these 6 years, and many more to come. It looks like, I mean, looking at the numbers, I got a 200th episode coming up. Maybe I should do something a little special. You tell me. Pop in at wordslingerpodcast.com. Send me an email. Tell me what you think I should do for the 200th episode of Wordslinger Podcast. It's kind of interesting to hit two milestones at within like a couple of weeks of each other. So very excited about that. Tell me what you think I should do to mark the occasion. Be sure to subscribe to Wordslinger Podcast on your favorite podcasting app. Whatever you're listening to right now, go find the show, subscribe, and do me a favor and leave me a review, especially if you're on iTunes, which may no longer be iTunes. I'm confused. I don't know where things are going, but Apple. Find me on whatever the name of the Apple platform is and leave me a review. Once that happens, I should get an alert at some point, and I may even read your review on air. Make sure also you slip on over to wordslingerpodcast.com and get on the Wordslinger mailing list, which I may have to do a little cleanup on. Everybody's kind of on high alert about the mailing list since I kind of dusted it off, and that's on me. That's an important reason why you should maintain a healthy mailing list with engagement rather than letting people sit for, you know, months or years with no word from you. I'm so much better with my author mailing list than I am with Wordslinger. But go check that out. Get on that. Say hello to me. Email me from there if you like, and we will we'll work something out there. And otherwise, thank you so much for the honor of sitting in with me. It's my honor that you are sitting with me. So thank you so much for being a part of the show, of this journey. And God bless you. And I hope you have just a fantastic week and weekend ahead. And I hope your writing career takes off into the stratosphere. We're going to help you get there. See you next time.
Wordslinger.